Welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio, the podcast for all of our heroes in public safety, including law enforcement professionals, firefighters, EMTs, corrections officers, healthcare workers, and more. This show is produced by the POCUA and is founded upon its Soundness Initiative.
This episode is sponsored by Police Mortgage. Police Mortgage is a full-service mortgage company dedicated to serving police officers and first responders. Founded in 2008, Police Mortgage offers a variety of mortgage products tailored to meet the needs of those who serve and protect. Police Mortgage, for first responders who are second to none. I am Ken Bader, your host of Public Safety Talk Radio. And no, nobody punched me in the face if you're watching on video. Although some of my listeners, watchers wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I had a little bit of a skin cancer that needed to be sliced off, which fortunately, it leads me to our conversation today. Fortunately, my wife found it very, very early. If I had taken care of it a little bit earlier, I wouldn't be wearing this bandage right now. It just froze it off. So it's a good analogy of understanding that, you know, the sooner you take care of problems, whether they're physical, mental, emotional, and so forth, the easier it is. And fortunately, this is semi-easy, could have been easier, but also could have been a lot worse. I'm here in my living room, not my usual makeshift studio today because of this. But regardless of that, I have an awesome guest today that will probably hit on some of the analogies that I just made. His name is Tony Jones. He is a retired Air Force professional. He also served in corrections and served as an EMT. So, you know, maybe he could have helped me out if, you know, he was actually here in person. But most importantly, he is the director and creator of the First Responder Program at Banyan Treatment Centers. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. I'm a retired corrections officer. I served in the Air Force, but I'm a retired corrections officer.
Got it. Well, yeah, I think that the, you know, because, you know, you had so many different careers, it's easy to get confused.
I met a fellow one day when I was doing an interview similar to this, and he asked what my uniform service background was, and I told him, and he said, "What's the matter? You couldn't keep a job?"
I've heard that before, but yeah. You know, thank you. You know, Air Force, corrections, you know, EMT, you know, on all levels, and all joking aside, I personally really appreciate your service to our country in so many different ways. And you're still serving. And so I think, you know, the biggest question or the where to start is, how did you even get involved with the Banyan Treatment Centers?
Well, by accident, how I ended up here, realistically. So the program design I came up with about 5 years ago, and I was working at a similar facility structure, but just not here, where I am now in my office. One thing just led to another. You know, one person talked to another person, and my former employer. And I were looking at the same image and seeing a different picture. And I thought I got asked to talk to a person, and I did. And we ended up here. And this, I'm happy to be here. This is exactly what my forward thinking of how I wanted the progression of what I do. This is the direction that I wanted to go. And, I'm thrilled to be here. The impetus for the program in and of itself was here, we're in North Central Massachusetts. It's a warm mid-November day. It's warmish here. So here it's about 60-something degrees, which is pretty warm for November in Massachusetts.
I'm from Chicago. Yeah, I know that's pretty warm for a November day.
It's pretty warm. We're pretty happy. It's not uncommon to have snow at this time. But the impetus for me to begin all this was as a retiree of the Massachusetts Department of Corrections, guys and gals that I was working with were committing suicide at an alarming rate. Correction officers here in Massachusetts, and I think nationally, are committing suicide at alarming rates, and it's continuing to happen. And so what I kind of took it upon myself to, for whatever that means, tell myself if I could in any way, shape or form mitigate, prevent, help anyone that is struggling with their life post, during their career, I was gonna do everything that I could to be able to do that. And so that was the impetus of doing what I do. It's you know, there's a Japanese term for called ikigai, and that's doing what you love. And I've not had a day where I've lied in bed and thought, oh man, I really don't want to go in today. That's never happened to me in 6 years. I love what I do. It's not work. I'm thrilled to be able to help in any way, shape, or form. But that's how the idea started. And here we are some years later, and I've been blessed to have a team of hardworking professionals, and we're doing hopefully some good work and hopefully making even a tiny impact in someone else's life.
Yeah, that's awesome on so many levels. And you know, one of the things, in just for the audience's edification, what led me to you in having the privilege of having you as a guest is I attended and also exhibited at the recent conference for the Wounded Blue, or put on by the Wounded Blue. And thankfully, I was stationed right next to a great lady named Tara Rivera, who was representing the Banyan Treatment Centers. And yeah, I had talked to her, and my audience knows this. You know, I'm alcoholic in recovery almost 4 years. And the one thing that I mentioned to her is that it seemed like, you know, while there's so many great things in AA, yeah, it seemed like, at least for me, that, you know, I kind of regressed a little bit, didn't go back to drinking, but wasn't, you know, really progressing as much as I would like. And the thing that I really liked about Banyan Treatment Centers was that there were multiple ways for recovery. And I really appreciated that, because I think whether it's in life or medicine or psychology or working out or business, there's always multiple ways to get things done. And that's the beauty of it. There's multiple ways to be able to adhere to and meet the person where he or she needs to be met, rather than just forcing a program that's all-encompassing on somebody. So to get to an actual question, not having been a first responder, I know enough first responders and worked with enough for over 20 years that I know that the job and the lifestyle is different. Yes. You know, nothing against an accountant that, you know, needs help. You know, there's certainly help available to you, but the job and the demands that creates a different need. So talk a little bit about the difference, that why it is different in helping, you know, with wellness, recovery, suicide prevention, specifically for a first responder.
Sure. You know, the folks that run towards danger, right, and rather than away from it, whether it be on a local level, state level, federal level, or in a world, a global level. I've been blessed to be able to do that. But what happens when one of us needs, we're the folks when 911 happens, right? You know, not Ghostbusters, we show up. So what happens when we need 911, when we have an emergency, not necessarily a medical emergency, but when our lives are in somewhat of crisis? It was my idea that, well, not my idea, my observation that there really wasn't a ton for guys like me that that I could reach out to. And quite frank, we're the people that we're kind of control people, right? We've been trained to control stuff. And what does that look like when someone's life is spiraling in a downward fashion, and they don't know how to stop it, and they might tell themselves that I can't ask for help. I don't know how to ask for help. I don't know what to say. I don't know who to say it to. I don't want to raise my hand because then I'm that guy or that girl, and nobody wants to be that guy or that girl. You know, and end up in the laughing factory. Nobody wants to do that. And so oftentimes a person might say, I'm going to figure this out. I don't know how, and I don't know when, but I'm gonna. And then the problem is it never gets figured out. Hopefully I've created, with a lot of help, created a situation where a person can find a place where they can be themselves and talk about things that other people in the room understand. Not my original thought, but oftentimes a person of uniformed services might say to themselves, there's something wrong with me and I may never be ready. And no one understands me. And that's not true. That doesn't mean that that's not what they're saying maybe to themselves, right. But we get it. I've worn a couple of uniforms in my life. And so you'd not be surprised that just me sitting across the table from someone and, you know, they've learned that, you know, I've worn an Air Force uniform or I've worn bunker gear or I've carried a gun or I've been behind the walls of a safe prison for a long time and not doing time.
thank you for the clarification. Like, you know? Let me get out. No, never mind. Go ahead.
it takes the time that it may take to establish a therapeutic rapport, a therapeutic relationship. It goes away because at least one person has had at least one similar situation, one similar experience as them. Because you know we don't really want to talk to people that we don't trust. We're not a very trusting group of people, as you probably already have figured out. So we can reduce that time by just knowing that all right, he gets it a little bit.
Are you looking for a podcast to answer some financial questions? Well, then check out the Mortgage Beat podcast, brought to you by Police Mortgage, for first responders who are second to none. Mortgage Beat gives insight into the home loan process specifically for police officers, firefighters, and other public safety professionals. The podcast is hosted by Police Mortgage CEO John Aritos, who has decades of experience in the mortgage industry. Check out Mortgage Beat on Spotify today.
The other thing that I noticed, I don't know if it was at the Wounded Blue conference or the website that I really, really appreciated is somewhere Banyan Treatment Center has really talked about the aftercare program.
Yeah.
And I personally think that is really important. You know, you might not even want to call it aftercare because there's, you know, care for the rest of your life. And, you know, to give you context, you know, I think of a family member that, you know, never identified as an alcoholic, but it was pretty clear, you know, he had some physical issues and wound up in the hospital for a number of weeks. And because of being in the hospital, you know, got sober and felt better. And, you know, they cleaned him up and all that. And instead of discharging him to a rehab center, which I think would have been perfect, where he would have learned some different things, maybe learned a different way. You know, he was adamant that he just wanted to go home because he couldn't get into the good rehab center. And, you know, sure enough, I think about a year later, you know, he drank, he rolled his truck and, you know, now, you know, he can't even talk or know who he is anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think of, you know, I share that story just simply because if he had had that aftercare, you know, if he had had something more, you know, even if he didn't like it, you know, to just be exposed to a different way through different people, you know, especially for his case, other military individuals that, you know, maybe he would still be here, you know, coming, you know, to Thanksgiving and talking to us like he always used to. Yeah. So you know, talk about what Banyan does and the importance of the aftercare program.
Okay. Let me start here. So the entry criteria, if you will, for participation in this program is prior active military law enforcement, fire service, EMS, dispatch, and behavioral medical professionals. Research says that the longer a person stays in structured recovery programming, the better likelihood of a good outcome, mm-hmm. long-lasting recovery. And so aftercare for us is a big deal. We refer to what we're talking about, what we do here, kind of like a military context, is this is their basic training of recovery. And then aftercare is where they, like advanced infantry training or tech school, we call it in the Air Force, is when they learn how to refine themselves and learn more about it. And aftercare can mean many things. It could be sober living. It could mean, attending some mental health counseling with a psychotherapist or psychiatrist. It could look like going to some of our partner organizations for EMDR treatment. Mm-hmm. It could look like a whole lot of things. Case manager Ann is fantastic at what she does. And since our time here, which is about 6.5 months, everyone that literally 100%, every single person that's come through our doors has left with some form of aftercare. That's how good she is. Mm-hmm. I've been compared to, I'm about as huggable as a porcupine.
If I was in person there, I'd still give you a hug, man. You know,
no, you needed it. that's an excellent point that you bring up, because sometimes people think that, all right, I did X number of days, I'm good. It's a one and done type of thing, and that's not necessarily true. There are people that happens to, but I would rather err on the side of caution and continue to. And I refer to what we do here as training, right? I look at it, this is a learning opportunity. This is where a person can learn how to be themselves, comma, sober, or, and for someone that, because that happens here too, is folks come in for mental health treatment as well. So that they're going to hopefully learn some basic skills on how to be themselves in the best emotionally, physically well-being the best versions of themselves that they can be. And hopefully mm-hmm. we're at the ground level of that. And then whatever aftercare looks like is that when they refine some of those skills that they've learned here. The longer a person stays in structured recovery activity, the more likely a better outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So on day one, Ann is talking about aftercare.
Yep. Yeah, that different way needs to include some other activities, whether it's going to meetings or, for me, which will surprise some people, you know, the meditation, you know, helps, quiet time. And yeah, some of those, there's several, kind of like we had talked earlier, that there's several ways to treat an issue. There's several forms of aftercare depending on what's working for you. Yeah, in terms of aftercare, in having the pleasure of speaking to a lot of people focused on first responder wellness like yourself, has talked about the importance of bringing family in at some point. And I think that is critical, having gone through something similar myself. It was huge that I had such support from my family. And it's not the main reason for treatment, right? It should always come from within, at least I believe. But having that support structure around it as well, and having people that understand and also are able to voice some of their difficulties. One of the things that keeps me sober is in sobriety, I realized, through what my wife told me, everything that I put her through. Mm-hmm. And that was a harsh reality that I needed to hear. And I hope that was somewhat cathartic for her to actually be able to share that and have me understand it. So, the treatment really is for the whole family structure. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect and aftercare? Yes, sir.
So we like to involve all the stakeholders in a person's mm-hmm. life that come into treatment, whether it be their spouse, their family, their age to their municipality that they may be employed by, or whatever that, or union representation, whatever that looks like. And here's why it's important, because this is not a solitary, as you know, a solitary lone disease of addiction. And so if involving the stakeholders only makes sense in my mind, because these folks aren't that come here to treatment aren't going to live here, right? They're here for a very short window of opportunity in their lives. They're going back to their lives. They're going back to their families, going back to their agencies, going back to their departments, hopefully a better version when they entered. But it's sometimes very often important for a person to hear. I just said this to someone yesterday. What would your wife say about your drinking? Uh-huh. Right? Because sometimes it's the minimization of substance use happens, right? And so, okay, that's great. But what would your family say? Would they say the same thing that you're saying? And likely the answer is no. And so uh-huh. getting everybody on the same sheet of music, it makes sense to me, because everyone is and everything is affected by a person's substance use. If that's their uh-huh. struggle, kind of like a pebble dropped into a body of water, right? This concentric circles from where that pebble entered the water. We want to involve all the circles, right? So uh-huh. family makes sense to us. We're not in the business, by the way, of telling anyone that they are addicted or to anything or things or not.
Correct.
We are in the information providing business. We are going to provide as much information and as much education to our folks, and they can formulate their own decision about their own life, because it's their life. Anecdotally, we 2 years ago or so, we had a fellow come into treatment. He was an on-the-job police officer, and he had this pesky 15-a-day beer habit. Mm-hmm. And he came in the treatment to get his wife, who was a nurse, kind of off his back. Well, he he had no way, shape, or form was any going to sign on to any saying that he was addicted to alcohol at all. And I'm like, okay, fine, that's your life. You can view your life any which way you'd like. Well, here's what he did do: is he stayed for 30 days. He fought and a little bit on aftercare, but he took her recommendation and he went to one of our aftercare partners. And he stayed for 3 months. Mm-hmm. So somewhere along the line, he heard from someone, it's likely unlikely that it was me, but someone that works with me or for me, he heard something that made sense to him, that pesky 15-a-day beer habit mm-hmm. turned into 4 months of continued recovery programming. And knock on wood, I believe he is still sober to this day.
That's awesome. 15 beers a day. You know, that's like 3 loaves of bread. I'm getting fat just hearing about it. That's why vodka became my choice for the last last 4 or 5 years I was drinking. I think I eventually went to some rot gut vodka rail crap because I couldn't afford to have 15 vodka sodas with Kettle One.
So we see we're not trying to tell people how to live their lives. Right. We're just hopefully being able to offer options that make their lives easier. Right. If it's working for you, continue to do it. Have at it. Uh-huh. You know, guy or gal, have at it. But, you know, being honest with themselves is something that we want to be able to, you know, look in the mirror and like what they see and go back to their, if they're still on the job, to go back to their job, their departments, the best version of themselves that they can be. And involving all the stakeholders makes sense. And here's why I say that it makes sense to me. To me, and I'm not an economics major, but it makes sense to me to invest in the personnel that you have rather mm-hmm. than get rid of that guy or that gal that maybe got themselves into a jam sandwich at work or outside of work. Reinvest the money you've already paid to have that officer, mm-hmm. we'll say, rather than spend the time, money, effort, recruitment, and in waiting for that person to come out of the academy, which is long and it's hard. You know, the COVID pandemic really put a monkey wrench into a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Invest, it's going to cost you less money to reinvest in that person rather than to find someone else and go through all that again. Keep the people that you have, because those are good people, or else they wouldn't have the job that they do.
Right. Right. I completely agree with that. You know, sometimes I think it goes to prevention. I think it goes to, you know, sometimes you do need to cut bait, but You know, why not, you know, continue to build on what you've already done there.
Right.
And yeah, great, insight into, you know, the family members and so forth. You know, I heard something a number of years ago, early in my recovery, you know, when you realize what you've put, you know, other family members through, you know, and I kind of, really realized what I put my wife through over, you know, course of about 10 years. And, you know, your instinct, and it probably is the same with first responders, because they're there to help somebody. It's like, I got to make up for that. You know, I've got to do something, to make good on that. You know, I never realized. And I had somebody very wise tell me, it's like, you know what? The gift is to stay sober so that she doesn't have to deal with that ever again.
Yeah.
And, over time, you know, those folks, you know, just appreciate you being sober without creating chaos. Yeah. Right. Now we can go out and my wife could have that third glass of wine because she doesn't have to babysit. She doesn't have to think about driving. She knows I'll drive because I'm sober. And she can actually relax and enjoy herself. So, you know, sometimes that's the best gift that you can do to make up for it.
Absolutely. The other part is that I never realized that how much my career had hijacked my family, right? I was only going to be able to, there was no talking to me when I immediately got out of work, right? There was, there was a very small window of opportunity where I was not going to be a grizzly bear to deal with, right? And so... Mm-hmm. Being able to have, and it's not good news, right? It's not a comfortable thing to hear some things about themselves from the people that they love them, but it's necessary. I don't have to like a lot of truths about myself, but just because I don't like them doesn't make them less true. Right? I'm not 6'3", I don't weigh 225 pounds, and I didn't play for the Dallas Cowboys. I love the Cowboys, by the way.
I picked up on that, but go ahead.
But but nonetheless, they're true, right? In dealing with a person's own truth is the key to this. You know, the lies. It's time to stop lying to ourselves and stop pretending that our lives are different than what they are, because we're the only ones that think like that. And so. What part of not only what we do with substance use treatment and education is helping the person learn how to, because if they're going back, we realize in a very acute manner that the suicide rate for this demographic is extremely high. And so we 30 days of treatment, which is about ish how long a person stays here, for the person in treatment may seem like a lifetime, but for us, it's a very small window of opportunity. We got to hit the ground running immediately, because we may be returning that person back to duty with a sidearm, or putting them in the back of an ambulance with hypodermic narcotics, or whatever that is going to look like. And so we take this very seriously. And unfortunately, we've had some alumnus that had ended their lives. And we take this seriously, and we got no time to goof around. We hit the ground running, and we're serious about what we do. This is work, what they do here, and it's not comfortable. And I'm infamous for saying, it's not my job, it's not my team's job to make you feel good about yourself. That's your job.
Yeah.
We're hopefully going to be able to give you the tools to be able to contribute to your ability to be happy. But none of what we do here feels good all the time. It's not. This is not, even though this is a very nice place, we're out kind of in the woods, and you can't see the facility from the road, which is also very nice. It's a very nice place to be. It's work. It's work being here. It really is. And it's not intended to be comfortable, and it's not intended to feel good. And one of the teaching methodologies that I've employed here is to harken back to a person's academy life or basic military training life, in which might have been, you know, the best versions of themselves. Right. And so lots of times a person thinks, or the public thinks, that, you know, being in the academy or a fire academy, police academy, or basic military training, you get screamed at all day long. Well, there's certainly enough of that, but a lot of it is classroom, right? And so that's what we do. There's no, we don't wear campaign hats here. And I have been known to yell at some people, but usually myself. But we talk about some serious things that are applicable to their lives. We talk about moral injury. We talk about identity. who you are versus what you do. So on a dry erase board, I will put two phrases, open-ended statements. I am a, or I work as. What do you think the police officer, the corrections officer, firefighter is going to answer? I am a firefighter. I'm a paramedic. I'm a police. Well, that's your job. But who are you? What are you? You could have answered, I'm a father. I'm a son. I'm a husband. I'm a wife. All right. And why that's important to identify is because if you are always thinking that way, you're always hypervigilant. You're always looking for something to happen that's not going to happen. That's called hypervigilance, right? Where do you sit at your local Applebee's? I sit with my back facing the wall, right? Looking at the door, looking for a threat that never comes. I'm not saying it can't come or hasn't ever come in this country. Unfortunately, it has. But if you're looking for something that's never going to happen, what does that say to the people around you? What does it say to your children and your spouse? That you're not paying attention to them because you're not present. You're not in the now with them. And so we're trying to teach all of that holistic, that whole encompassing versions of their life.
Yeah. So much to unpack there. A lot of great insight. You know, this isn't a religious show, but I remember reading very recently, and I know I won't get this right, but it's kind of a paraphrase that really hit me, is the something to the effect of fear is the opposite of faith. That you know, that by fear you're basically telling God, it's not in your hands, it's in my hands to protect everything and everyone. Yeah, instead of just believing that, you know, it's his responsibility. So I thought that was a really interesting statement, especially, you know, for first responders and so forth. So to begin to wrap up here, you know, one of the last points that I really want to hit on is Banyan Treatment Center talks about, and I'll read it here because I don't remember exactly how I put it or that you put it, co-occurring disorders. And, you know, I've seen this, you know, where people, you know, are drug addicts, but they also drink, or they're, you know, they have a gambling problem. And then, you know, after they lose, they go to drugs and things of that nature. And sometimes, unfortunately, there's a mental issue. There's a mental disorder like being bipolar, and then you go to drugs or alcohol to try and self-treat. So fortunately, as far as I know, I only have one major problem, which is alcohol. But I know other folks, you know, generally will have a couple of issues. How hard is it to treat a co-occurring disorder, and how do you get somebody to begin to recover from that?
That's an excellent question. And my time in the back of an ambulance is I look at it this way, is what is the person's immediate life threat?
Right.
Right. Which is going to be the immediate lethal part of their life. And is it, because it's six of one, you know, half dozen the other, chicken and egg type thing. Anxiety, depression goes hand in hand. And lots of times a person may be involving a substance. You know, and it's, we talk a lot about, you know, a lot about alcohol and drug usage, but addiction can be to a lot of other things. It could be to shopping, to gambling, to pornography, sex, a whole host of things. Any behavior that is avoidant behavior to that person avoiding their reality, whether it be the reality of their environment, the reality of the way that they emotionally feel, that physically feel if they're in chronic pain, anything that is that they're using on a regular basis that is not in their best interest, and their life just kind of spirals. So to answer your question, it's complicated. But again, we start what, at least my mind, what is the person's immediate life threat? We find that if we can stabilize one thing, other things start to get better. Right. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, if a person stops, we'll just use alcohol as an example, stops drinking, as you described, your family member, some things just kind of fall into place. Right. And then it's an opportunity to try and address depression, or try and address through medication or therapy or all of the above, some of the other things that contribute to why that person was involved in an avoidant behavior to begin with. But it's complicated. But I start with what is your immediate life threat? Is it your anxiety? Is it your depression? Or is it your usage of alcohol to mitigate all of that? Does it make sense to stop one and maybe the others get better? Does it make sense that learning how to live with depression may look like taking medication and going to therapy rather than drinking a half gallon of vodka a day, which is eventually going to kill you? Right. So being dead from cirrhosis of the liver is no less dead than an overdose of fentanyl. Dead is dead. So kind of putting I say it to people a lot. This is cards on the table tonight. Right. Let's tell some truths about ourselves and let's get to why you might be doing that to begin with. Why is it that you're engaging in avoidant behavior that may be lethal? Left untreated addiction is potentially fatal. It not only may kill the person physically, it also kills your career. It kills your physical health, kills your mental health, kills your family. It kills everything around you and about you. So we want to talk about all of that. And we do a lot of talking, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, I love that. And I really appreciate the analogy of kind of a triage type of approach, on a much, much lesser level. When I went to so-called consulting school, they even said the same thing about a business. It's like you fix the biggest problem first.
Right. If you're a firefighter, does it matter immediately if the house is on fire? Is it more important to know how the fire started when it's on fire, or putting the fire out and then figuring out the cause later? Let's put out the fire first.
If somebody is gushing blood out of their chest, you kind of need to handle that first rather than the sprained ankle. Worry about quick that trauma either. Excellent conversation. Before I let you go and do more important work than speaking with me, for those folks out there, those first responders, those public safety professionals out there that may be struggling with something, that may be sitting there and saying, it probably wouldn't be a good idea to at least talk to somebody. How best can they find Banyan Treatment Centers or get some help out there online?
I believe Banyan Center, if you do a Google search, there are 16 Banyan facilities nationwide. There's even a Banyan facility in Alaska. We happen to be here in Massachusetts. We're the first and only first responder treatment specialty curriculum of all Banyan facilities. We just happen to be here in Massachusetts. If a person wants, I can give you my email address. And if people want to email me, feel free, and I'll answer you. My email address is anthony.jones@banyancenters.com. Banyan Centers being one word, anthony.jones@banyancenters.com. And I'm happy to talk with anyone at any time. Sometimes this is a negotiated process. I learned from Brene Brown that courage is the core of courage is from the heart, and telling your story from the heart. We oftentimes in this westernized culture think that courage is doing something brave. Well, it is having the courage to be vulnerable, to raise my hand and say, listen, something's not right. And I may not be right, but I might need some help to figure some of this stuff out. I might have to learn how to be me, literally learn how to be me. Yeah. Let's begin to talk about that. There's a way out of this. There really is. And we one of the other things that we talk a bunch about the neuroscience of all this stuff, a whole bunch. So they're pretty well equipped with the structures of their brain by the time that I say it a lot, and I do that on purpose because I want people to hear their voice in their head, because hearing my annoying voice in their head would be awful. that's why I say a lot of the same things a lot of the time, the same way all the time, because this muscle memory type stuff.
Yeah.
Go to banyancenters.com, I believe is the website, or email me. I have it, my number is 978-410-9271, and I will return your call.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for what you're doing. You know, probably a real critical question, maybe, you know, one of the most important ones in this session is, will Dallas actually beat a good team this year for a change?
Regular season, yes. That's not the playoffs. The problem.
Can they beat Philly or Detroit in the playoffs? You know, that's the biggest question.
All right.
All right. Now that I have made my guests feel uncomfortable, but also laugh, Tony, in all seriousness, thank you for your service. Thank you for what you're doing for first responders out there. I personally really appreciate it, and I know a lot of other people do as well. And I appreciate all of you that have either watched or listened to this episode of Public Safety Talk Radio, and we'll be back with you next week with another great guest.
Public Safety Talk Radio was produced by the POCUA. POCUA is a consortium of financial institutions serving law enforcement as well as other first responders and public safety professionals. To learn more about our association and to find one of our credit unions or service providers near you, go to www.policecreditunions.com. And always remember, if you aren't working with one of our POCUA credit unions, you're just banking with an institution that just so happens to serve first responders. As a public safety professional, you and your family deserve better. Find a POCUA credit union today.